Are you tired of selling kidney for a laptop? Do you need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that backache? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
What's going on? I can't travel to Durban and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
I'm Duncan McLeod and this is Tech Central. My next interview is with someone I probably should have had on the podcast a few years ago already, but for some reason we didn't get around to it. I'd like to welcome the one and only Mike Sharma to the show. Mike, how's it?
Thanks, Duncan. Thanks for the glowing intro.
So for those that don't know, Mike is the founder of Retroviral, a digital marketing agency, which has been behind some big campaign and brand launches in South Africa, including, Mike, if I'm remembering correctly, the Roca Mama Smash Burger. Am I remembering correctly?
Yes, that election burger before Trump came into power. That was one of the big ones where we had the Donald, the Hillbill, and the Joker as options for you to choose and vote for. And then we had this that accompanied it, so you could tick over your favorite candidate by purchasing and then taking a picture of that burger, and then that's how we tallied the votes in real time.
Excellent. What are some of the big campaigns you've been involved in over the years? What are you most proud of?
It's fascinating because we've just turned 10, so it's been one of those recent kind of retrospectives looking at the stuff that we've worked on, and I think there's a handful of things from those early days. Having picked up some Nando's work and basically taking a lot of the social commentary into social for the first time. So that was always a huge highlight for us. Making stuff go viral in those early days with the Last Dictator Standing, the Mugabe campaign.
Oh, that was fantastic. I loved that one.
we were the guys that seeded that around the world. And then, yeah, you've touched on Roca Mamas. We've done some awesome stuff for that brand over the last 4 years that we've worked together on. Most recently, we launched a sports marketing agency called Retroactive with Ben Kopinski and the famous Brian Habana. That was almost 2 years ago now. And at the start of that journey, we launched a campaign to take a regular Joe, who was an unknown. He'd never run a 5K. He'd never even posted to Instagram. Can you believe it? In this day and age. And he's one of my best mates, and he got what we call the Heathrow injection. So he put on some weight while we lived in London together a few years ago. And we took him from never having run a 5K to completing a half Ironman. And we documented that from jogging to eating better to having a nutritionist. He lost 30 kilos, and he finished that 1.9-kilometer swim, the 90-kilometer cycle, and the 21-kilometer run in succession, and with 15 minutes to spare. So that was quite an awesome achievement to start that small agency. And then more recently, we worked with a young lady from KZN, Kirsten Landman. Ryobi sponsored her to go to the Dakar, and she became the first African woman to complete the Dakar on a motorbike. And that has been one of the most successful campaigns we've ever worked on. We reached almost 1 billion people with that campaign. She was on every channel. Yeah, it was insane. She was on Red Bull TV. She was on Carte Blanche, on CNN. She basically got onto some of the biggest shows in the world because a few years ago, she nearly died. She came off her bike in Botswana and she hit a tree stump, lacerated her spleen. And the story of resilience and coming from absolutely nothing, almost on death's door, to then going on and completing the Dakar. She actually came third overall in the women's category. And what was quite incredible is seeing some of those videos, because she was a Dakar GoPro hero. So she had a GoPro on her front of her bike. And then every day they would strip out some of her highlights and put it onto the global feed. So all the local broadcasters, whether it be Supersport here or Sky and other markets, Kirst had a daily update from her heroics. Mm-hmm. And there's one video where she's just pulling the throttle down and she's just in her mirrors. You just see these guys just disappearing in her dust. And I think it was kind of like that. It was almost like the quintessential image of her being greater than a traditional male-dominated sport, which is incredible.
Sounds like a lot of fun you have in your job, Mike. Is it? I mean, what's your day-to-day job entail?
No, I mean, I think every day is different. For me, like, I love the thrill of those campaigns because that's where I get my kind of entrepreneurial kicks out of, creating the talkability, getting people interested in the storytelling that we're involved in. The safety of the business and the bread and butter thereof is running social media accounts, running communities for certain brands. And in the office, especially on the likes of Rockamamas, the team of community managers that serve that page, they have competitions of who can create the most viral tweets for the month. So they even have like a scoreboard of some of the best tweets that they've put out. Or, you know, it's a great brand because you get to have a lot of banter and not necessarily appease the audience. There was that whole campaign that went viral a year ago now with that KFC couple. So there was the KFC proposal, and then all these other brands started jumping on it. We'll do the lighting and decor. We'll do this. And then a guy tweeted Rockamamas and said, Rockamamas, I'm bringing my girlfriend to Rocco's today. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. What will you give us? And the community manager just said, a seat. You know, and like that kind of thing is really, it just accentuates the kind of sense of humor that exists and the freedom that exists within the staff. Like, I have this saying that we've never wanted to be the biggest agency. We wanted to be the best. And I think that's the kind of character and individual that we try and encourage to put themselves out there in the social space. So that's what I really enjoy, is like we thrive under challenger brand challenges. We do really well with the brands that don't always have the biggest budgets, but they have the best intentions. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm really proud of where we've come to. It's a hell of a lot of hard work. You don't really get to switch off because the internet never sleeps, as you know. But we do. We get to have a lot of fun and drive our families nuts with the brain never switching off.
Mike, you mentioned you started Retroviral 10 years ago now. When was your actual birthday?
On the 1st of June. So it's very recent.
It just happened, right. It's how happy birthday, Mike. So before you started Retroviral, you worked at various agencies. What made you strike out on your own 10 years ago? And was it a scary move?
So, I mean, I had a pretty interesting background where I studied marketing, but I always wanted to be an actor, spent a bit of time in Hollywood learning how to do stand-up comedy and writing content. Wow, wow. And I always loved performance and storytelling. And I actually ran a play for a while. That was like my first ever startup, from everything from budgets to production to marketing the thing. And then I met Kian and Nikki from Tribeca. And they'd just gone alone in 2006, 2007, when they left Tex 100 to start Tribeca. Mm-hmm. And Nikki said, why don't you come work for us? We're hiring. We've just won this Virgin Money account. We've taken MasterCard over from their previous agency. And I didn't really know much about PR. I mean, it was kind of like a module at university. You know, your industry, PR is kind of frowned upon because of all the negatives associated with it, spamming your inbox, bugging you for, have you published my press release, Duncan?
I still get those every day.
And when will you post my story of my client? and then obviously, like, the whole thinking around events and girls in short skirts handing out canapes, like, that's that stereotypical, terrible view of what PR actually is. But with Kian and Nikki, they really understood the strategic thinking on how to tell a story, so that if they gave you content as a journalist, it wasn't just, my brand is spectacular. It was like, this is the problem with the industry. Mm-hmm. Those Virgin Money days were all around like the big four banks and, you know, the ripoff around card fees. So what Virgin Money had to offer was something that was combative to that or competitive to that. Yeah. And I think as a journalist, those are the stories that you guys get excited about. So they taught me about the importance of strategic comms. And then I won a fancy dress competition to go to London to watch the Proteas play at the home of cricket at Lord's.
Fancy so dress competition. What were you dressed as?
Dressed up as Borat at Kingsmead.
Are there photos of this, Mike?
I'll definitely send you some after the interview.
Okay. And we might have to put that in the entry on the website.
Good link bait or some link deterrent, either way. So we went to London. We moved to London for 2 years. And then in 2008, when I was commuting to work on the tube, I was fascinated by Twitter. So I started following a few of the journos, people back home that I knew, people who were journos in London, and one or two other celebrities that were using the platform quite interestingly. So I would check in on Twitter on my feature hybrid smartphone and see what people were tweeting about. And from 2008 to midway through 2009, I was obsessed with like analytics, and I wrote a small blog, and I loved seeing like where the eyeballs were coming from. And for me, I kind of like to straddle this role of communicator and high level techie. Like, I'm never going to be technical enough to code, but I'm going to be able to understand what the jargon is that you're speaking as a dev, so that I know you're either pulling some BS or you actually are being legitimate with your time concerns. And that was kind of the role that I played in my London agency. They were interested in me talking to clients, explaining what social media was all about, what analytics and insights meant. And then I got to a stage where I was being self-taught the whole time, that I felt it was a good opportunity to come back to South Africa to start an agency, because broadband was obviously improving. Mm-hmm. Cost prices were on the down, especially with the introduction of CECOM and a whole bunch of other initiatives. So I felt like this is a great time. So I started doing some sketches and like doodles in terms of what I wanted to put together. For me, I'm not a business plan fan. I'm more like a kind of structural fan, and then I feel like your customers will define what it is that you actually offer, and by taking their feedback on board, you'll define your business in a better way, knowing how people use it or engage with it. And then yeah, I came back in 2010, launched Retroviral, and managed to pick up a small account through Ogilvy, where we did some community management for Miller at the time. And towards the end of that year, picked up some work with Nando's, and that was kind of the game changer. Like, slotted us into this perfect niche, hyper-focused on amplification and working with influencers before influencer marketing was an actual thing. And then from there, we won some awards with the Nando's work. We had a great partnership with Black River and the content that they were creating. And it just got to a stage where, you know, we took one day at a time. And then eventually by 2016, we'd expanded our breadth of work to not just be like an amplification earned media agency, but an actual really good storytelling agency. So we won Rocamamas and we won Russell Hobbs in the same year. And then that allowed us to flex our multiple creative muscles and to show that we could create TV commercials, we could do in-store elements, we could do billboards, as well as digital being our core focus and our sweet spot. And we've just kind of built a small but nimble team of about 15 people, and we just really love doing cool stuff. And that's kind of our guiding principles, really. And then in 2018, then we started having chats with Brian Habana at the start of the year, because he and I were at school together. I always joke about how I knew him when he was a skinny scrum half and when he was wanting to be a BSc IT guy. And we just kept in touch over the years. And when he was having his knee problems, when he was playing in France, we said, like, let's look at doing something together. So we actually went down a path where he'd been at Toulon Business School as part of his rugby career. The French are quite supportive of a lot of the players being able to go and get extra education for the end of their careers. And he did a thesis around a concept that was about helping rugby players after they retire. So almost like a closed social network, a support structure, because so many of the guys struggle after they retire, especially with mental wellness. And he'd been working on this. And we said, why don't we create some tech where we could analyze the value of sponsorship for brands, and you could compare like an F&B with an Absa, and you could say, is the Epic delivering more value than the Wines to Wales, for example? So we started having a few of those chats, went and met with a few sports agencies. We spoke to a few sporting related brands, and we just felt like the investment on that front was going to take a lot longer to actually convert. The sales cycle, the funnels, all of that good stuff was going to take a little bit longer than we hoped. So we said, why don't we just create a sports dedicated aspect of what Retroviral does? I'd worked on a few sport brands in the past. We'd worked on some stuff at the World Cup in New Zealand in 2011. That's where Ben and I have pretty much met each other for the first time and did some work together, Ben Kopinski. And in 2018, Brian was out for the All Blacks test, and we started Retroactive with that triathlon campaign with my mate as our guinea pig. We launched that to a few sports media, and we just hit the ground running, and fortunately haven't looked back on that front. And then as COVID was approaching, my last outing was to Anfield, to Liverpool versus Bournemouth. And it was the most incredible atmosphere. You know, there was murmurings that there was going to be a lockdown on sports. We didn't realize how aggressive and dramatic all the shutdowns were going to be. Mm-hmm. But I spent the weekend, went to some of the local pubs at Anfield, just had the absolute best fan experience. And then we went into lockdown when we came back home, and here we are. And we'd registered a domain at the end of January, matchkit.co. And we felt like we were going to spend 2020, we will tinker a little bit, and towards maybe the end of the year or beginning of 2021, we'd go live with this product. And the insight from Brian as a player and someone who really understood his commercial brand was that so many athletes don't even have a website. And then when you go down this journey, you start seeing, you know, obviously socials become the de facto space of posting. Most athletes have an Instagram and then some ancillary platform. Mm. But you'll search an athlete's name, and so much of the content isn't even owned by them in their first page or two on Google. You might see one or two of their social pages, but there's so much stuff about what other people are saying about them. Unless you're a Serena, a Lewis, a Roger, or one or two of those sorts of big names, so few athletes are thinking about their personal brand. So we said, what if we create a website builder, something that's a DIY plugin through Instagram? You can build it in a couple of minutes. You can showcase your sponsors, because athletes are generally terrible at name-checking their sponsors, something we've realized worked with them over the last few years. They then can showcase their stats. They can also raise money for their charities, because a lot of them are doing philanthropic work. And then the kicker was really adding this built-in merch store where they could take their logo, they could create branded caps, tees, and hoodies, and without having to deal with any of the hassles, because we're using an API that pulls into a global commitment partner, that then gets previewed on the merch and it can be delivered to anybody in the world. Well, probably except for South Africans because of our lockdown situation right now. But it allows you to commercialize your career in a way that you'd never thought of. It allows you as the athlete to become a brand, to become a shopfront, and to be able to transact, be an e-commerce play, and be a do-good play by raising funds through that platform. And we just said, listen, based on the situation with COVID-19 and lockdown, let's accelerate this. Because then there's a lot more of a captive audience of athletes during lockdown. We can talk to them. We can talk to the agents. It's probably the best time that you'll ever have with them not being able to play sports, that we can actually communicate on a one-on-one basis. Pull in some testers, see what they think, deal with some bugs. And I'm stoked to say that from domain registration to build, it was 4 months to get to that MVP, which we feel is better than a minimum in the minimum viable product. And we've attracted some really great athletes so far. And we went publicly live last week, Wednesday, and we're getting some incredible stats. So that's my elevator pitch.
All right. So I presume you're doing all sorts of clever search engine optimization behind the scenes to get this onto the first page of Google search results.
Well, it's actually been the PR that's been the best part of the campaign so far. We partnered with Lorato, who's ex-head of CSA comms, and then a wonderful lady called Mario McGlynn out of Ireland. She's an ex-World Rugby employee, and she's doing some consulting on her side. And from a South African perspective, we focused on general sport because of the size of our media landscape. And then in the UK, rest of Ireland and Wales and France, and then as Australia, we as well as South America, we focused on the sports angle with Brian as our spokesperson, because then that way we could leverage those diehard rugby communities, and then Brian as the spokesperson became relevant within those times. So that's kind of how we leveraged it, and we've had some incredible coverage from across the world, from the UAE, from UK, Ireland, South America, Australasia. So that's what's helped prop up the story and the fact that Habana's team has launched matchkit.co to help athletes get back in the game. Like, that as a headline has been very strong to attract interest across the globe.
Interesting. And how are you getting sports stars to sign up? Are you hoping for a viral take up here that other people will read in the media about what Habana's doing, for example, and sign up themselves? Or are you directly targeting sports stars around the world and saying, hey guys, you should be on this platform?
A lot of it's been word of mouth. So starting with our immediate circles, I'm always a fan of using those 1 degrees of separation or people that you know to then attract your early adopters. And then off the back of that, almost create that network effect where they let their friends know and their athlete connections know. I think that the agents are a very valuable network, because one agent can have access to a few hundred athletes. And that's something that we've really championed, is by saying, hey, agents, we're not here to eat your lunch. We're helping you to create a bigger buffet. Like, if we can make your athletes better personal brands, that means that they are more marketable, they're more valuable to sponsors, and that means upside for everybody. So our business model is a subscription, a software as a service business, which is $19.99 a month. Mm-hmm. And that includes the built-in merch store. The athletes make the profits off the merch themselves. There's the ability to raise funds for charity. So we said, listen, we're happy to stick to our lane, which is the subscription model. And then we want you guys to basically use this as a replacement to a website, because that's the thing. We're competing more with your site builders, your Wixes, and your team businesses, as opposed to social. Like, social is so disparate and fragmented that a match kit allows you to house all of your links in one space. And the other plus side of that is that for those athletes who don't have a custom domain, we've said to them, listen, if you want a custom domain, just let us know in your sign-up process, and then we'll go hunt for as close to that domain as possible, and then we can redirect that to your match kit. So match kit becomes almost like that epicenter of the universe to help you to go to wherever you need to go. And if you need to contact the agent, you go to the inbox, send the message, and then you can kind of engage directly from there. So we've kind of interrogated as many aspects that we can to get this thing live, and we're very stoked with where it's at.
Okay, so you could, just to understand what you're saying there, Mike, if I'm Brian Habana and I want brianhabana.com, which I'm sure has been taken by someone, probably him, and I wanted that domain, you'd go and register it, and then the Match Kit template would reside on brianhabana.com.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And that was a real fascinating insight. We had dinner with the VC at the end of last year, and he kept talking about, you know, what could we think about from a Brian plus X product or service that would scale? And his thought was like, what about supplements, or what about an energy drink for the US market? And that was like one little gem that was planted, or seed that was planted. And then from there, when so many of those winning Springboks came back from Japan at the end of last year, so many of them don't even have their own domains. There's a really highly regarded player who's probably one of the most marketable players in the world right now. He doesn't even have his own domain that he owns. Someone else is domain squatting on it. He's asking about $100,000, so like 1.5, 1.6 million bucks for it. So that's like, we feel that there's an education process that needs to happen. Brian was like quintessential personal brand and professional personal brand, because he registered brianhabana.com. He's Brian Habana.
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
The various social networks, so that there's a consistency in that. But you know, some players, they'll be like JL25 on Instagram, or they'll be like some other name on Twitter. And it's that thinking around personal brand that will ultimately make these men and women more marketable. And what's been really exciting about this has been the uptake from women athletes. And we've seen like some of the best run scorers from cricket England, a lady by the name of Tammy Beaumont, she signed up. We have the vice captain of the Irish women's rugby team. There's so many interesting individuals that have signed up. Tembi Khatlana, who is a Banyana star, CAF player of the year, CAF goal scorer or goal of the year, and she plays in Benfica now. She's probably one of our best exports from a women's football perspective. She's using the platform. And I always joke with the agents and the athletes that we sign up, because I say to them, you know what, of all the people that have signed up to date, we haven't had a single struggle from any of the women athletes. It's the men that struggle with the tech. You know,
that's interesting.
That's always our icebreaker when we're talking to these different agents and individuals.
It's funny what you mentioned about names, because I've got more than one friend who has had a children, and before the kid was born, they checked that the name was available as a .com so that they could register it, and registered it before they actually registered the name of the child.
I remember that was like with Andy Hatfield when I followed him in those early days of Twitter when I was still working in London. And when Jack was born, I think he got the Jack Hadfield domain within a few hours of him being born, you know, like it was that. So it was, and he was live tweeting when his wife had gone into labor. So it really is a fascinating world that we live in, and how it's evolved, and how much more social become ingrained in our social fabric.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I had a look at matchkit.io on my PC this morning, and it seems very mobile focused. It's got a sort of a narrow design, which seems to be for mobile phones. I presume it is. Is that deliberate, or do you actually offer a desktop version of Match Kit as well?
No desktop version at the moment. We went down the very hyper-focus route to get the MVP to market. So with matchkit.co, you use it on your mobile phone, you set it up on your mobile phone. It was that Instagram mentality of like, we're doing this for mobile and mobile only, especially when it comes to the mentality of the fans. If the fans are on social and they click through to a Matchkit, the likelihood is that they're going to be on mobile. The likelihood is that they're going to be interfacing from that platform directly. So down the line, we'd like to have native apps that we'd like to develop for the different operating systems. But for right now, mobile first, mobile only. And we're excited about what it looks like and the feedback thereof.
It does work on desktop. It's just narrow. Yeah. Exactly. And I just wanted to last question on Matchkit. You mentioned the merchandise stores for each of the sports stars, and they can launch these on the platform. What's the fulfillment behind that? How does it work? If a fan comes in and said, okay, I'd really like this rugby jersey signed by Brian Habana, he orders it. How does that delivery then take place?
Yeah, so we're plugging into the API from a global fulfillment company. So what happens is you can load any logo when you're building your match kit. So you could create a Duncan McLeod or a DM or however your brand would look for you. And then you'd upload that into your match kit store. It then shows you a preview. So if you want to do caps, t-shirts, and hoodies, it basically assigns it to that item. So you get to see what it would look like. And then that displays on the front end of the store for the fans to purchase. And then when the fans are purchasing it, it'll look at where you are based in the world. So we have the ability to fulfill anywhere on the planet, and it'll then calculate the shipping based on where you are based. Mm. So that's part of the process that we're most proud of, because the athletes never have to worry about any merchandise, any stocking, any logistics, any warehousing, and all of the stuff. So it's basically tapping into the trend of drop shipping. And for anyone listening or viewing that doesn't know what drop shipping is, it's basically like the merch is handled in the background. You assign the logo and the brand to what it is that you're serving, and then that gets taken care of behind the scenes. So you never actually physically touch the merchandise as the seller of it.
Okay. So the merch is it generic in nature? So it's stuff that you design it electronically, digitally, as the seller, and then it gets distributed. It's not as if Brian Habana has designed his own rugby jerseys that are then made available through the store.
Exactly. And some of these athletes have contractual obligations to a certain brand, whether it be Nike, Asics, Puma, Adidas, etc.
Yeah.
And so Brian's personal capacity, he has been involved with Adidas basically for his entire career and still is. So for his foundation, he's able to brand generic merch for his Brian Habana Foundation, because that doesn't conflict with his actual contractual obligations. And we've spoken to a few of the brands. Like, we'd love to be able to have, the Adidases, the Nikes, the Pumas on board. There are some challenges with SKUs and how a piece of merch can leave their warehouse, then be rebranded with Brian's logo, and then go out for sale again. So I think in the future, this process will become even more bespoke. But for now, we've chosen caps, t-shirts, and hoodies as like our starting point, just so that we can start analyzing the data and see what that means for your fans. And then if they do have a merch deal where they can't actually sell physical merch because it conflicts with any contracts, then they can turn that off, and then they can sell purely voice notes or videos to fans. And that way you can order a birthday message for one of your best mates, or a birthday video to say, Duncan, happy birthday. Like, this is amazing. I'm Brian Havana. And you can put that order through from the actual store. So we've kind of challenged, and we've spoken to a lot of the manufacturers and apparel guys to see what they would like, what the challenges are with their fulfillment processes. And we feel like we've got a few compromises where any kind of conflicts occur.
Mm-hmm. So Retroactive is the business that's launched matchkit.co, and it's a joint venture between yourself and Brian Habana, is it?
Yeah, so the shareholders involved in Retroactive are Retroviral. So Retroviral owns a stake in Retroactive, and then you have Brian Habana and Ben Karpinski, who are the other shareholders.
Okay.
Ben brings his fan insights. He's been a citizen journalist, a blogger, a content creator, and he's pretty much one of the most insightful sport fans in South Africa, when he focuses pretty much on the mainstream sports. And off the back of the work that we've done with Retroactive, we've delved into niche sports and spaces that we didn't even think we would go to, but we've become huge fans of the MMA and a guy by the name of Dricus du Plessis, who's one of our best fighters. He's been fighting at EFC, at the KSW leagues, and we're hoping that he's going to go to the UFC one day. So, you know, Ben really gets into the shoes and the mindset of the fan, of the ultimate fan, and delves deep into those loves, hates, and otherwise from those worlds. We've been doing some awesome stuff recently with MatchKit, with Brandon Stone, the golfer. You know, he's launching his own charity, his foundation, the Brandon Stone Foundation, shortly. And just incredible individuals. And you really start tapping into these different insights, and we get to create content with them and get to showcase them at their professional best. And I think that's what we love about sport, is that we feel like we fit into that behind the scenes locker room kind of mentality, where we can tell the stories that most fans don't get to go, but they wish they could see and wish they could be a fly on the wall in.
Yeah. I was going to ask if there's opportunities for content for sports journalism to be integrated into this platform.
Definitely. With this platform currently, we've got the ability to showcase your social channels, but then there's also two video rich aspects. So there's the embeddable YouTube side of things, as well as the embeddable TikTok side of things. For me, huge fan of TikTok and its explosion, especially during lockdown. Also the adoption and the virality thereof. I think if we consider what we're seeing in our timelines across all social, TikTok is smart in the sense that it creates its watermarked content that then proliferation of it and the distribution of it into other social networks has been the thing that you see the most. And subconsciously or consciously, that TikTok video is always in your timeline now. Mm-hmm. And for us that are on the cusp of being millennials, and we're starting to feel like, are we keeping up with the trend still? It's an absolute new world in that TikTok landscape. And for me, I think that's why we've included it, because I think that the explosion is just going to continue. If you look at the growth, I think from a quarter perspective, TikTok had the best global growth quarter ever compared to any social network. I think it had 2 billion users. And obviously you've got your Asian market, you've got China, you've got India now, which has become the biggest audience. But still, I think Snapchat always struggled in South Africa because of Instagram stories eating their lunch. Mm. But there's something about TikTok that gives you the ability to incorporate real life songs, the memeability of it that jumps into your different time zones. Like, it kind of becomes that conduit for leveraging whatever the zeitgeist is on social.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen friends of mine who are sort of my age, mid to late 40s, jumping on it now. And I still haven't signed up for TikTok, but
all the moves.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'm going to have to go check it out at some point, Mike. Great. So, I think, Mike, let's leave it there. It's a good chat. Matchkit.co is the website if you want to go check that out. Retroviral. What's Retroviral's web address?
Retroviral.co.za and retroactive.digital. And then on most of the channels, we are Retroviral across social. And then with Retroactive, it's Retroactive Live across most of the channels.
Excellent. Mike Sharman is the founder of Retroviral and the co-founder of MatchKit.co. I look forward to seeing how the business develops in the months and years ahead. Mike, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We'll have you again back on again in the not too distant future, I'm sure.
Thanks for having me.